Pure Dog Talk is the podcast on purebred dogs. We talk to the legends in the sport and give you tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Pure Dog Talk is sponsored by ChampionshipBreeders.com. Championship Breeders is a proud supporter of the American Kennel Club, our specialty and all breed clubs, our dog sports, and the gifts of therapy and service from our canine companions. Joining us today is Suzanne Dillon. Suzanne is a breeder of German Shorthaired Pointers and Pug Dogs. She is approved to judge all sporting and toy breeds in the American Kennel Club. She brings 30 years of judging and a lifetime of breeding into her ring when she's making her decisions. She's also a very successful artist. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. Thank you very much for joining us, Suzanne Dillon.
Oh, thank you for being invited. I'm honored.
Well, we appreciate your time. So, Suzanne, we talked a little bit in the introduction about your background. And so what I would like for you to talk to us today about is pug dogs.
Pug dogs. All right. Where would you like to start with pug dogs?
I would like for you to talk about your ideal pug dog. I'd like for you to share with the exhibitor how you came to that, your understanding of the standard, and how you feel the standard guides you.
All right. Well, I'm a member of the Illustrated Standard Committee, and so we've been working on our standard and the visualization of it. So I have a view of a little square dog with a curl over its tail, curled over its back, and a round head. Our standard doesn't tell you how they travel. Our standard doesn't tell you a lot. So you have to imagine a lot of it. But if I were to tell you what a pug looked like, it is square. It's four squares, actually. It's elbow to the floor and elbow to the shoulder. And then the square then makes that. And so we need that to be definitely square. We're having a lot of problems with top lines, long bodies, flat feet, loose tails. We're losing our round head in favor of a more elongated head with their ears popped up on top of their heads. Not the big luminous eyes that they ask for. And so I'm really working very hard trying to get an illustrated standard that will show. When you look at it, it'll come in sections and you can see, okay, there's a line through the eye, there's a line across the nose, there's a line across the chin, there's a line across the top of the head, so that you can visualize it in your own pugs if you have that ability.
Absolutely. And I think that that's an important point, Suzanne. I think that people as breeders, when we're getting started as breeders, and as we're going forward in breeders, and we have our own vision of the standard, and being able to evaluate our dogs.
Right.
And can you talk to us a little bit about, as a judge and as a breeder, how those things are different, what you see in a ring and what you see as a breeder? How are those different?
Funny.
Or how are they the same?
Yeah, I think that's kind of a funny question, because let's start at the beginning, breeder.
Mm-hmm.
And mostly, when you come into a breed, you learn a very few things, and then all of a sudden, you think you know all about that breed. But anyway, so we get a person now who starts to breed. They're called a breeder. Those are not breeders. Those are putting dogs together to have puppies. We have a lot of those in the show ring. We don't have mainly people who study genetics, structure, pedigrees. So you get, as a breeder, and I've been here for 47 years, bred about 150 champions, and I've had best in show in all three breeds that I've had. And mainly, I get discouraged because there is no communication between what I call the vintage breeders and the new people, because the new people are thin-skinned about what they think they know, and the breeders then are turned off because no one will listen to them. So we have a conundrum here.
And that's exactly what I think we're trying to solve, is this conundrum. And maybe that's a big project for us to solve.
Well,
but I would like to try and contribute to that. So what I'm hoping we can do is talk to some of the newer people and share your vintage breeder knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a breeder, when you're looking at a pug dog, when you're planning a breeding, okay, for you, how far back do you go? How many generations back are you going?
That's a good question, too. I rely almost totally on the mother line. So when I go back, I may go back four to five generations, no farther. You've already lost most of what of that. You've built from that, but you've lost most of that. So that four or five generations is pretty important. I also line breed. And in fact, I do a lot of close breeding. Mm-hmm. With most breeds, it's pretty straightforward. With pugs, it's a little difficult because you're dealing with something that's not normal. You have no nose. You have large eyes that they don't sit out, but they're in danger. You have a small dog, but they're heavy. So you have a lot of weight on the front, not much weight on the back. And people don't understand, I don't think, as you described in the beginning, they don't understand that if you draw lines on them, you can see them. I'm the mentor chair for the PDCA, and I'm trying to teach the mentors how to speak, how to say the words of the standard, because first of all, you can't bias it with your own opinion. And second of all, you have to know how to say what you're saying. And so I've reconstructed the whole mentor process for the pugs, and I'm basically throwing all the mentors out, making them start again, making them take structure exams, making them take the read tests, making them come to meetings at the nationals to learn how to talk to people. Because you have to be able to describe what it is that they see. And most of the teaching that I do is through questions. What do you see? What don't you see? What does this dog not have that he should have? And so consequently, we make them think. And I do the same with judges, because you can't just read them the standard and think they're going to understand anything. They're not going to.
Well, and I think that that's true in all of our breeds.
Yes. You know?
And I think it's very difficult as people are learning new breeds. It takes them a while to grasp.
Oh, it does.
All the fine details. And certainly pugs are a breed that have a lot of, like you say, complications.
Yes. They have, yes. Contradictions.
Contradictions,
yep.
Absolutely.
Yep.
And so I like what you're doing in terms of teaching your mentors, to
mm-hmm.
teach the mentors how to do a better job mentoring. I think that's a great
right.
idea.
Right.
And so how are you seeing that move forward within the club? Are they then taking it and mentoring judges, or they're mentoring other breeders, or how is your mentor program working that way?
Well, since I'm in control of it, it's going to work. And... And so, after laying out all the things that we were going to change, we lost 90% of our mentors, because they just want to be a mentor. They just want a mentor badge so that they can sit ringside and go, well, I'm a mentor. Well, you're not. You're not if you don't know your breed. You're not if you don't know the standard. You're not if you don't know anatomy. So I'm trying to work from the bottom up. And I would ask a question to you. What about breeder education? What about that? Because... no one's doing that.
Right. And that's a whole big part of what we're hoping to do with this series, is bring forth ideas from really long-time successful breeders.
Right.
And talk about, okay, where do you start? How do you get there? Because it doesn't happen overnight. There is no magic fairy dust.
Yeah. And on the top of all of that, many, many, many of these clubs are stubborn in the sense that they're not going to change their procedures, their attitudes, their way of thinking or speaking or learning. They don't want to change because it scares them to be changed. And so you have to not only fight what you're teaching, but you also have to fight the parent club.
A lot of times.
Parent clubs.
Right.
And they're just not willing to turn it loose. They're just not willing to do that. So consequently, I think it's very, very difficult. It's taken me years and years and years to finally say, okay, you're going to lose me if you don't adopt this, because that's the way I teach.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so if you were queen for a day, so you're queen for the day.
I am queen for a day.
You are queen for the day, yes.
Yeah.
So we're trying to encourage the new breeders. So mm-hmm. we're trying to say, okay, we want you to succeed.
Yes.
We need you to succeed. Mm-hmm. Purebred dogs need you.
That's right.
So here's what we're going to do to help you.
All right. Starts at the breeder level. It starts when you sell a puppy. Where are you selling that puppy to and for what reason? How do you help direct it? How do you get into that and say, listen, I'm going to be involved in this. I will help you. And I can't tell you how many times I've said, I can save you 10 years. I can save you 10 years on any puppies you might produce or any success you might have. I can save you that time if you will listen to me. If you will just listen to me. I don't mean to direct your business, but what I need to do is give you options that you can look at and say, well, I want to go in this direction. Well, I like this. I want to do it this way. Okay, I can help you do that. But But it's very difficult. It's almost like a fiefdom. They will not give up their space that they think they've built. And you can't build it in 5 years.
No, Rome was not built overnight.
No, and when I say to someone, well, you know, I've had English Cockers for 47 years, and they look at me like, what? What? Well, I'm only 48, so it was difficult.
Yeah.
But, and all the breeds, honestly, all the breeds that I've had, I've been very, very involved in their pedigrees and their genetics. I'm exceedingly involved in the genetics of the dogs. Building a healthy dog is very difficult. And English Cockers, I would say maybe 6, 7, or 8 years ago. Here's an example. I bred to a dog that the breeder didn't tell me that the sister of this dog and several other members had familial necropsy, which is kidney failure. So I bred to him. I didn't have it in my line, so it didn't evidence itself. But I went back to the same place with a different dog, and she didn't tell me he'd produced it, blah, 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 blah. So consequently, we had a litter of just gorgeous, gorgeous dogs. They were group placers, winners, the whole nine yards. But we couldn't breed them because guess what? One of them died from kidney failure. So what do you do about that? And I would ask anyone, what would you do about that? Would you be afraid that the dog world will beat you to death and send you away and you can't do this anymore? Yes, they would be.
Right. So your strong advocacy as breeders is for better communication, openness, share the good and the bad, own it.
Yep. And the dog's name was Journey. He had a very short one. But I said to my partner, who was younger and newer, and I said, Colleen, I'm going to put this in our magazine. Now, what do you think about that? I said, they can't run me off of the stick. I've been here too long, you know? They can't hurt me, but they can hurt you. And she said, no, put it in there. So we advertised it. And I put the pedigree, and I put my phone number, and I said, if you want to call me about this pedigree, feel free to. 150 calls later, with all the worries and the concerns, there's no transparency. It's all, oh, my dogs are great. Well, you know, my dogs are great, too. But I know where to take them. I know what to do with them. And that's what we need to learn. You can't be a doctor without going to school. You can't be a handler without going through a journeyship. Why do they think they can just suddenly walk out and go, okay, now I'm a handler? You don't know anything about dog husbandry. You don't know anything about anything, business, anything.
Yes,
it's the same thing with judging. It's the same thing with breeding. It's the same thing. And people don't want to spend that time. They just want to walk in the ring. Okay, I'm going to win now. Maybe not. Maybe not for long.
Well, and I think that's a valid point. Lots of people have expectations of doing well rapidly.
Yeah.
And so again, as a breeder, as a judge, your recommendation is spend the time that it takes to learn.
Many of the top dogs today, this is a whole different subject,
okay,
are not the best of their breed. There's a lot of money behind them. There's a lot of politics behind them. And consequently, those people, the real breeders, have a hard row to hoe. First of all, they breed good dogs, so they look different than the ones that are out there. And they go, well, it doesn't look like that one. You can't win. We need a whole new education system.
And that's what we're suggesting here is okay, so let's give some hope. You're a good breeder. You're a preservation breeder. You're a person that's doing it right. You don't have X million dollars.
Yeah.
So are we educating the judges? Are we educating the breeders?
No.
Who are we educating?
We're not educating anyone.
Currently.
We're not even educating them so that they can apply for breeds, okay? And this is a major thing. This is going to kill us. When all this matures in about 2 years, you know, I truly am worried we're not going to be seeing dog shows. Let's give us 10 years.
Well, so our question then is, let's start now. Let's fix it
yes,
now.
Yes, let's
so
do it.
Let's say you're a novice breeder, you're a novice handler, you're a novice owner, whatever, you're brand new, you're excited about the sport. And why are you excited about the sport? If you're brand new today, what excites you about the sport? Or what excited you when you started?
Well, I came from a dog family. So dogs were my life. When I was a little girl, I couldn't run away from home because I couldn't carry the dog food cans. That's when they had cans, you know, they didn't have... So I had to stay because, God knows, I couldn't take the dog with me. So I've been with dogs my whole life. And falling into it as I grew up was just a natural thing. My husband was not a dog person, and so I had to stand my ground every day because he discouraged that activity. I had to take 3 children with me when I showed. I had to have a clean house. I had to have food in the refrigerator. Well, you know, he got over that. He really got over that. But in the beginning, it was very difficult. And I had really no money. 0. So the fact that I survived is pretty awesome.
And what kept you going?
Awesome. I knew I could do it. I knew that if I had enough information, and I did a lot of study on pedigrees and where's what and how this worked, and I knew that if I just had enough information, I could build a really good dog. And I did. I've built a lot of good dogs, but it's not easy. And I don't know what brings them into the sport now. I think it's just, I don't know, boredom maybe, because people really aren't interested. They want to buy a puppy from you, but they don't want to know what to do with it.
I think one of the things that definitely brings us all together is that we all love dogs. I think that's where we all start.
Yeah.
And then where we take that.
Right.
You know, I think maybe is part of the process.
Yeah, we could take it into training. We could take it into obedience. We could take it into nursing homes. We can do whatever we want to with our dogs, but that's not the thing. It's a competition of it.
Right.
And I'm the most competitive person alive. I mean, I am just death on. You're not going to beat me. You're just not going to. Well, you know, that's not true at all. It happens every day. But I still have that attitude. I'll tell you a story. I have a little black pug at home. And that's another point about black pugs. Let's talk about that for a minute. Black pugs are very difficult to finish. The judges feel that they don't have wrinkles. Well, they damn well do. All you have to do is look. They feel like they're almost a different breed. Well, they're not. Why do you wear black, do you think? To look slimmer. So they never look as heavily boned and whatever as the fawns do. So it's really difficult for them. And genetically, they're different. I mean, it's taken us a long time to get into building a really good black. And so, anyway, I have this little black dog. His name is The Godfather. And I call him Vito Corleone. And he goes, yes. But he's so much like his grandfather. And he's not the best pug I ever bred. I'm showing him. I love showing him. We have more fun. I've never won anything with him. But I have more. I leave the ring just with this little dog named Vito Corleone. I just adore him. And that's part of it, is that you can grow up enough to know that this is supposed to be fun. This is supposed to be a fun thing. And when I judge in the ring, I have fun. I laugh, I crack jokes, you know, like Casey goes, I'm going to. Because why would you want to be there and be bored?
Well, and maybe we can talk just a kind of as a final piece on this, a little bit from the judging perspective. And you've been judging for
35 years.
I was going to say, pretty close. Part of what I hear from exhibitors is the judges don't care. You know, the judges are disinterested. They're staring off in another ring. Mm-hmm. The most offended they get is when the judge is not giving them their 2 minutes worth.
Yep.
And so can you talk to that a little bit about what do we do within the fancy to encourage the judges to enjoy the sport, to enjoy what they're doing?
Well, we're going to have to revamp why they're doing it. Is it because, you want to give back to the sport? Okay, no. Is it because you want to be with your friends? Yes. Is it because you want to have a place? Yes. How good would it be if you were just doing it because you were putting a puzzle together? And every time you had the opportunity, you got to find another piece of that puzzle. How about that part? How about the part about knowing that when those people came in the ring, that you've been there, it's difficult, it's hard. I scrabbled through it when I was younger. I think a lot of the people who are now judging are too far removed. I think there's no interaction. I think they're disenfranchised, is what I think. And somehow we need to get them back into the fun part. I only hang with the people that are fun at the shows. And sometimes I'll look at it and go, I'm eating in my room tonight because I don't want to do this. I don't want to talk dogs 24 hours a day, and I don't want to be unhappy and criticized and all that stuff. Life's too short. So there's a lot of things that we can do, but we're not doing. You know, one of the things we had in San Antonio about, it's been a long time, but I was involved in it, and I tried to get AKC to do it. We had a symposium And the symposium had judges and handlers and breeders and veterinarians and blah, blah, blah. And we sat there, and do you know, we had 60 people come, and we talked, I know, for 4 hours, asking questions. We had AKC rep, and I kept saying, this is what we need. Why don't you let me go to the bigger shows and put out a place that says conversations? Throw some coffee in there, sit down, and say, come on in, have some coffee. Pretty soon they'll be talking about dogs. Pretty soon they'll be talking about what the problems are. Pretty soon they'll be, uh-oh, we're going to get to know each other, and then we're not going to be hateful. Uh-oh.
I love that. And you probably don't know, but we, Championship Breeders and Pure Dog Talk, we just had a Friday night forum. Exactly that.
Did you?
We did. We sat down three judges.
Yep.
And invited people to ask questions from the audience. And do you know, we had 60 people at an 800 dog show that
yes.
I couldn't make them leave after an hour, and it went for two
They're
hours.
They're hungry for this.
Absolutely.
They're absolutely hungry for it. And for some reason, it's not important.
Well, and I think that's one of the things that we as exhibitors can do. Let's make it important.
I know. And every time we think of something like this, we think, oh, let's make an organization that'll do this. No.
No, we're doing it.
Yes. But it's not like, oh, let's have a judges organization. Oh, let's have a... No. Let's have... Well, Bill and I are talking about a bunch of stuff to do. Bill Shelton.
Yeah. Bill Shelton is part of what we're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. And so... You know, every time we get together and talk about this kind of stuff, it's the same thing that we're discussing now. Mm-hmm. And if somebody doesn't take the bull by the horns, it's going to be bad.
Yeah, and I think that's what
we're trying to do. It already is bad. It already is bad.
And we appreciate your time joining us.
Thank you.
So that we can take that bull by the horns and maybe...
wait a minute.
Ride it off to the sunset.
Now, wait a second. Wait a second. Wait. Wait a minute. I got that, you know. Anyway, thanks
Thank
for inviting me.
Thank you very
me.
Much, Suzanne.
Thanks.
We
thanks.
Really appreciate your
Thank
time.
Thank you. Thank you.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. This will help share the love with others out there in the sport. This has been Pure Dog Talk with your host, Laura Reeves. We hope you can join us next time as we continue on the journey to success with your purebred dog.